My name is Amy Esdorn, and I'm here at the Society of Petroleum Engineers Annual Technical Conference and Exhibition at the George R. Brown Convention Center in Houston, Texas. Today is September 29th, 2015, and I'm speaking with Roland Moreau. Roland, thank you for participating in this interview.
My pleasure. I'm glad to be here.
Well, let's begin. My first question for you is, how did you get involved in the industry?
Well, I retired actually last year in 2014 from ExxonMobil, but I really, once I left college, I actually had been in the energy sector ever since. My first job out of college was working in the nuclear industry, where we manufactured and assembled nuclear reactor cores for the Navy, for submarines. And then in about 5 years after that, I interviewed with Exxon. At the time, it was Exxon USA, for a job at their Bayway refinery in New Jersey. And the rest is history after that, as I stayed with Exxon in various types of assignments for 34 years before retiring last year. And one of the things that is probably unusual maybe for somebody working for a major oil company is all of my home locations have always been in the U.S. So I went from New Jersey from 30 minutes outside Manhattan to West Texas, which was a little bit of a culture shock, but it was a phenomenal living standard when we got out to West Texas. I mean, the people were really friendly, and it was just a lot of fun. And then we ended up moving from West Texas to Houston. And again, love Houston. This is home. And so it's Exxon that actually got me the different locations. But it was in that time with Exxon, though, while this was always a home location for me in Texas, is I did have the opportunity, and I'm going to say privilege, to really visit all of our operating locations around the world. And it's just been phenomenal from that perspective. And SPE, I find, gives you that same feeling of having that international aspect.
So what did you get your degree in your...
I got a Bachelor's of Science degree in Mechanical Engineering from Worcester Polytechnic Institute. And after I started working for Exxon in New Jersey, I went to Fairleigh Dickinson University and got a master's in business administration, focusing on international finance. And that was a good learning experience as well. So
that's interesting. And was that just because you decided to go into that because of where you were, what you were doing at Exxon?
No, it's personal interest. Mm-hmm. Even going into my current role right now on the SPE board as VP of Finance, it's just one of those things that's been a long-term interest. But guidance I've given to young engineers throughout my career that have joined the company is to consider going for an MBA because it teaches you other aspects of the business that you might not normally be get an opportunity to be exposed to. And it really works out well because I'm a firm believer that those little tidbits of knowledge that you gather in those types of courses help you to make better business decisions. So that depending which company you're in, if you get a degree like an MBA, it may not immediately transfer into a job promotion or salary treatment or whatever. My contention is it also allows you to make better decisions, which then lead to career improvements, you know, that go along with that.
And so when you transferred to Exxon, what were you doing at first?
I start off as a project engineer. It's two-thirds of my career, which we'll get into here in a little bit, have been in the HSE arena, but that really wasn't a predominant field when I started in industry. It's one of those areas that, from a regulatory perspective, really evolved over time. So I really originally started off as a project engineer working projects around, you know, the refinery. Got involved in an office building renovation and construction project, which gave me a wonderful feel for those trades, as well as gave me my first taste of project management. And then moved from that into a financial analyst role, working budgets for the refinery and doing reconciliations, which, again, got me into understanding how does this actually work behind the scenes for a refinery. And that was good. And then at that time, Exxon USA was just embarking on the LaBarge project in Wyoming. And that was my first, when I put my big toe into the HSE arena for the first time. It was trying to obtain permits, regulatory permits for the LaBarge project. And minus a couple little forays outside of HSE after that, most of my career after that was in the HSE realm.
And so let's talk about that a little bit. What were some of the challenges that you faced, since this was a new and burgeoning sort of discipline or aspect of the industry? What were some of the challenges that you faced?
Well, right around the time that I first got into the regulatory arena, number one, the U.S. regulatory environment looked nothing like it does today. And one of the major regulations that had just come out was RCRA, the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, to manage hazardous waste. So when it's that new, then it's literally, you don't have consulting firms out there. You really just had to get in and just really try to understand what it was and how it impacted the business. And over time, it started, the regulation started mounting, I guess, for lack of a better term, but you really had to learn it from scratch many times. And this is before the industry was really hiring an environmental professional or safety professional. And I think it's fair to say, and it's true for Exxon at the time, and it's fair to say for other companies, the safety culture was already being addressed. It was already fairly well embedded. So the challenge that came up is, how do you take what you've learned in building a safety culture to building an environmental culture? And the things that have changed over time since then is, usually what we did to protect the environment were driven by what the regulations asked. And over time, and as communities got more educated in this area as well and more aware, then the regulations started coming out to support what the environmental expectations were, so the situation actually flipped. So again, it's being able to work with regulators, being able to work with the communities and help them understand what we do to make sure that you don't have regulation for the sake of regulation, and that you don't do environmental protection just to get bonus points on something, that you're really trying to do something that benefits. And the challenge for all companies at that point was, how do you take all of these things and work them into your business strategies and business plans so that it's all integrated? So it's not just something else you do as part of your business, but it's actually just part of your whole process. And the company I work for, as well as the rest of industry, has really progressed incredibly well in that arena. And if you look at that in today's world, then you say, okay, so you went from regulations to environmental expectations. Now we're starting to delve into social risk management, because we're working with communities, and they have expectations. We get into sustainability, which is still a relatively new, I'm going to say, buzz term within the industry. And this is something that, to SBE's credit, is we were able to develop a definition for sustainable development that at least provides guidance on what member companies should be doing in this arena, and then leaving the details to them, obviously, because that's not our business within SBE, but it's a reflection of where we are with society.
And so were there any specific regulations that came about that were particularly challenging to implement or to sort of or integrate into your business plan?
First I referenced the waste piece, and of course there are differences between the upstream and the downstream when it comes to waste management, but it's really understanding that. And this is when you get questions of what do we do with tank bottoms in the upstream side, but you get all the questions would range all the way to, what do I do with fluorescent light bulbs? I mean, it was that early in the process. Things that happened after that, though, is a lot more awareness around the Clean Water Act, which was there, but it was, again, is obviously the upstream end of the business utilizes a lot of water, and we have a lot of water we need to manage afterwards. And so it's the regulations, how does that apply to our business, and a certain component of that is also working with regulators and helping them understand what our business needs are in that respect. A little bit later, then you get into the process safety management rules under OSHA, that it started having a smaller universe of people it applied to, but then you look at it in today's environment, and the whole concept of process safety management has gone far beyond what the original, I want to say, PSM regulations were entailed, because they were so focused on certain types of plants now process safety is a topic of discussion across the industry as well as within SPE. And here at ATC, I've seen special sessions on it and whatever, because people are wondering, how do you do better jobs at addressing risk and managing those risks, and how does that lead to better decision making? That all led into management systems. I was fortunate to work with a company that really developed a lot of the early ones with OIMS for ExxonMobil at the time, and it was operations integrity management systems. But that becomes now a core part of everybody's business, is coming up with your management systems for how do you manage HSE risk in your business. And it's a structured, disciplined approach to trying to do that. You see a lot of changes coming up in the air arena that are very challenging. And it's not just emissions out of flare stacks, but you hear a lot of things even with hydraulic fracturing, is the methane emissions that go into that. It's all tied to climate change discussions, and people are trying to interpret a lot of items that some are better than others at making those interpretations. But it's really, how does that impact our business and what decisions can we make? Because bottom line is, we're still, the upstream is aimed at trying to meet the energy needs of the world, and how do we do that in a safe and environmentally responsible manner, but also in a manner that's cost effective, because we also have shareholders that we have to satisfy. So it's a lot of those types of things, and now it's also like the HSE realm, like a lot, so much of the rest of industry, is moving into a data management cycle where there's so much data out there, and what can we learn from the data we have? And do we need, so take a look at the metrics we've had, and it's looking, do we have the right metrics? Do we have too many metrics? And how do we help the metrics, learning from the past so that we can be better in the future? So there's been a lot of evolution in this area, which has been a challenge, but it's also an incredibly rewarding when you're part of that.
And so in the beginning, when you were just starting out, you mentioned that there were no really environmental professionals at the time who were consulting. And so you were really jumping off at the ground level. What was that like, and how did you sort of cope with all of that information and trying to meet standards and regulations?
It's education, and I referenced the education of communities, but there's a lot of internal education. It's really just trying to help people. I mean, it's one of the things that if you have 100 people in your company, it's not very good use of time to have all those 100 people read a set of regulations. So you need to get some expertise, but it's recognizing also you need expertise in the area of reading the regulations to understand what they say. But then once you understand that, it's also recognizing that there's an ownership issue, in that it's not going to be an HSE group that will own an emissions number or emissions performance. It's how do you translate that such that operational folks take ownership for it, but that also means they have to understand it. So that you don't want to necessarily just comply for the sake of complying. It helps if they can understand why it's there, why it's important. And that's really where an HSE group can come in, is help them understand that part.
So sort of along those lines, you talk about education and what have you, but what is some of the best advice that you've been given for working in the industry?
Well, especially in the HSE realm, it's one of the first reactions, and unfortunately maybe all too common, is to complain. And it's very easy to do that. But it's it's really helping to try to understand if there's a regulation that comes out or an expectation that comes out from a community, there's generally a reason. And it may have historical significance to it, or it may be something that the data set that they're basing their regulations on may not be totally complete, or they may be doing extrapolations. It may be driven by bad performance by the industry. It could be a number of things, and it's really trying to understand what those are so that we can It better enables you to more effectively get your forward plans. So it's that. So part of it is my advice is while it's frustrating to see some of these things come out, that's okay. Just get it out of your system and but then be open to understanding, because it's you can take a look at those types of risks, those types of challenges, and turn them into opportunities. And in this industry, which, as you've heard our SP president say, is it's a competitive industry, that is one of the competitive aspects of it, is how do you take some of these challenges, and a company that can successfully turn those into opportunities will probably get a slight edge on the competitiveness at that point, because they're going to get viewed more positively by their external stakeholders.
Well, thank you. And so we're ready for our last question, which is, how has being an SP member affected your career?
When I started in refining, in the downstream sector, SP is not a player. So I actually, I didn't join SP until I became part of the upstream to work on this LaBarge project that I referenced. And the great part about that is it's the networking aspects. It's just been phenomenal because it, you know, in the HSC realm especially, is we enjoy the fact that not too much of what we do gets caught under this cloak of intellectual property where it's you can't share something because it's a competitive nature. So we are able to share a lot of our practices. What it comes down to is how people implement them, and that's the competitive part on that. But the networking aspects have been phenomenal for me because I've met people that I'm still friends with today, that I've met with other companies, that you're able to test your knowledge on things with them. And SPE's been a great facilitator. And recognizing the HSE discipline with SPE is relatively new. It's only been around for almost 15 years now. Watching the growth of that is even more proven what SPE can do in this realm, in that it's still an underserved discipline. There are still many, many people out there that work in the HSE discipline that are not SPE members because they still don't quite know about us. And we need to get out there and do a little bit more promoting and help people understand the benefits of that. But it really comes down to it's getting all these global experts together, and SPE can provide this unique forum for them. I mean, to just ask questions. I mean, somebody in West Africa can ask a question that maybe someone in Canada will have the expertise on, and from an SPE perspective, we should feel good because we've actually connected them. And so that's really where it's been a plus for me, is I've been a member, for over 25 years, and I've never regretted it. It's just a phenomenal organization.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with me today, and this was a great interview. Thank you.
All right, well, thank you very much. Mm-hmm.